Welcome to Scare My Best Friend to Death, where we answer the only true horror question. Will my best friend survive this movie? Join our hosts, Crystal, an avid horror enthusiast since she was a small child, and Katie, who has to sleep with a light on after watching anything remotely scary, as they discuss the best horror movies Crystal can make Katie watch.
Hi, I'm Crystal.
And I'm Katie.
And tonight on Scare My Best Friend to Death, we're going to be talking about the 1932 pre-code classic Freaks. This is currently at the time of recording streaming on Tubi. It is incredibly hard to find on a streaming service that you don't have to pay for. So please take advantage of it if you've never seen it and go to Tubi and watch this. The director is Todd Browning. This stars Olga Baklanova, Harry Earls, Daisy Earls, Prince Randian, Schlitzky, Pip and Zip. There are quite a few list of characters in this movie. Spoiler warning, you've had 91 years. What are you doing with your life? Trigger warning, there's gore, there's violence. This deals with a circus. There are little people. If that is not your jam, deuces. We completely understand. This movie has a lot of social triggers in it. There are a lot of things that we have renamed to be more culturally appropriate in today's society that were not back then. Especially the name of this movie is Freaks, because back in the day when you had a circus, you did not have a sideshow, you had a freak show.
Yep.
So that is what this movie is kind of based on, or kind of looking at. We're looking at the sideshow characters. This is based on a novella. You really can't call it a novel, but there are installations in a magazine that got published all together. But this is based on Spurs by Todd Robbins. That's Robbins with two B's. Katie, going here. Was this your first time seeing this movie?
Yes. Yes, it was.
One of my favorite things about this movie, because we talk about this a lot on this show, I do not need a movie that is 3 fucking hours long. My attention span cannot handle it. I don't want it. Give me something short and sweet. That is this movie. This movie is approximately 64 minutes long. Now, when it was originally released, like today we get those, if you're in certain markets, you get invitations to come to a screening well before it's released. You're kind of a target audience, and they want your feedback. Well, when that happened for this film, there was a lot of pushback because of the subject matter, because of the sideshow characters that were in it. It was considered extremely graphic, extremely gory back then. This is pre-code, so they did not have a lot of, you know, limitations in what they could or couldn't show or couldn't do. The original version of this movie was 90 minutes long.
Oh, wow.
And the studio stepped in after that initial, you know, viewing or two viewings, saying that, you know, the audience was like absolutely against this movie. It was too gory. And they lost that remaining 26 minutes. It is gone, like gone. It burned. It disappeared. Oh, wow. Like it is not. You cannot find it. So this is what we're left with. Now, this movie was banned in several countries until 1962. In 62, it kind of had a revolution. It popped back up. It went to an Italian showcase that was similar to Cannes, and then got another release. But they colorized it. That's really the only difference, was they put some Technicolor in there. This is a phenomenal film, I think. And I think it deals with a lot of prejudices, a lot of stereotypes, mm-hmm. and it does it in a way that's not demeaning to those that it's about. You get the sense that with this movie, that the sideshow characters, or, you know, as it's called in this movie, the freaks, they are really the ones, the stars of the show. Like, everything kind of revolves around them. And then you have some normies, normies being normal looking people, or, you know, what yes. we quote unquote called normal looking people, normal appearances. And they are kind of the worst people in this sideshow mm-hmm. act. They just have the worst attitudes. They are horrible. These normies are the Karens of their day. Okay. Yes. They are absolutely disgusting characters. And you really do wind up siding with the sideshow people.
Yes.
So in our sideshow, we have two dwarves, two little mm-hmm. persons, that they are played by Harry Earl and Daisy Earls. And they are brother and sister in real life. But in this mm-hmm. movie, they had to play love interests. Okay. Let me ask you, how weird would it be to play a role where your opposite is your sibling, but you have to play as if that's your love interest?
It would need a lot of alcohol.
Yeah, it's just...
For after the fact. I don't know. I couldn't do it. Because, yes, you're acting. And I even, you know, in my notes, I was like, oh. So while I watched the movie, I was like, okay, I got to pause it. But not because I was scared. Because I went and I looked up the actors.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, now we have green screen and we have all of these CGI effects and all these different things that we can do. But back then I was like, did they have these capabilities, or were the characters actually portraying people with those conditions? And I found out why, yes, they do actually, the twins were actually conjoined twins.
Yes.
They're billed as a Siamese twin, but you know, now just say conjoined. And when I looked at, because the first two I looked at were Frida and Hans.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was like, I couldn't tell just from with the black and white, I could not tell. I'm like, are they child actors? Or are they little people? And then it blew my mind. That not only were they little people, but when this movie was released, now I don't know the time between when it was filmed and when it was released. I'm guessing, you know, same as we would have today. Harry Earls was 30.
Right.
And Daisy was 25.
Yes.
And I'm like, holy cow. They, so then I'm like, oh gosh. So they're not kids, but not only are they look like kids.
Well, they had hypopituitarism. So yes.
So they didn't have I guess you could say like a quote unquote normal version, or normal.
They didn't have a normal adolescence or a pubescent period.
They didn't have dwarfism.
Mm-hmm.
They were not what we would consider today as a little person. With the hypopituitary, they looked like children. And I don't care if you're 30 years old, if you look like you are 5, in my mind, you are still 5.
Ma'am, that's a backwards way of thinking.
But after watching this, and it was like an optical illusion almost, because the way that they're portrayed in the movie, they talk like children.
Mm-hmm.
And his character is so easily swayed like a child would be. But I don't know if that was just hurry up the storyline or not. with Hans and Frida, or Harry and Daisy, they are, I have to give them 100% credit. They were awesome. I could not have acted opposite my brother like that.
Yeah, no, I could, it, I just, they're professionals, so that's a wonderful thing. So Harry and Daisy Earls are part of a sibling group. They're part of seven siblings, but four of them had hypopituitarism or dwarfism, and so the four of them became known as the Doll Family. And they did travel around Germany. They were originally from Germany, so they traveled around Germany in kind of a circus sideshow. And then they met a couple by the last name of Earl that convinced them to come to America and begin in the entertainment business, i.e. movies. And so they took on their last name. They took on the last name of Earls when they came over. But there was four of them. And Daisy, little Miss Innocent Daisy in this movie, was known as the mini, actually, it's not appropriate, but this is what her stage name was. She was known as Midget Mae West. And she would dress up as Mae West on the sideshows and do her little performance. So, it's not culturally appropriate right now or politically correct in today's society, but that is what her stage name was. Little Miss Innocent, she is not. Now, originally, so we have some normies. We have Cleopatra, we have Hercules, we have Venus, and then we also have the teacher as normies and one of the rodeo clowns. Or, or just a clown in this case. Now, there were different actors and actresses that were originally kind of Todd Browning was thinking about having them in it. And one of the ones that I found that was the most interesting was Hercules was originally going to be Lon Chaney, who was the Wolfman. They were going to use this as a vehicle for him, but then his name was known at that time and Todd Browning didn't want to use him. As Venus, they were going to have Jean Harlow. But because she was so widely known, Todd Browning really didn't want any of the normies being acted by people that were already popular in mainstream media at the time. Whether A, it was because he didn't want that to be the attention of the film, or he didn't want them essentially getting blacklisted because of being in this movie. So it's pre-code. And I say pre-code kind of almost in a way as like a dog eat dog world where anything goes. So, but this was, it's a wonderful movie. I think it's a very progressive movie, especially if we think about the time. I used to watch this movie with my grandparents when I was younger. My grandmother really liked old musicals and movies of that sort, but my grandfather was never really into horror movies. As a matter of fact, my dad would start one up if my grandfather was sitting in a chair somewhere, and the first instance of blood, my grandfather would get up screaming, "Oh, I'm gonna
Poor Paw
throw up." But my grandfather really loved this movie, and I do remember watching this movie a lot as a kid. But you think everything's old as a kid. And
This is
I, I was surprised the first time that I found out that this was from 1932. This movie was very progressive for its time. It's almost like it's a movie made in the 60s.
and that really was one of my main overall impressions was, wow, they've got this whole in the middle of the Great Depression, and we're starting to get into at the early 30s. We haven't quite gotten to World War II just yet, but there was still a lot of prejudice and racism going on in their country at that time. And here we've got a movie about how everybody is equal. and one person is just as important as the other.
Right.
And, I mean, you throw in some serious P.T. Barnum vibes, and you've got a show.
Right,
And
yeah.
I
I think
love
they
how
do
it
a wonderful job
starts.
with this.
Yes. I love how it starts where they're you can't see what they're looking at when the guy is talking. He's like, and he's trying to get everybody's attention to the one display. He starts telling them the story, and then it's like I get back to you get to the end, and he comes back. I'm like, oh yeah, he was telling a story. What are we gonna see? Like, I completely forgot for the whole hour that we started out with him telling a story.
Right. And he's telling you about the greatest sideshow you're ever gonna see,
Right.
and how women have fainted and people have, passed out and puked or something along those lines. But yeah, he's telling you the story of how that sideshow act be came to be.
Yes. And I think, as we go, you go get more and more into the movie. One of my favorite character was Venus, because she's kind of between Venus and the teacher or nanny, because
So you
they're
had
kind
a
of
you
the
had
mother
Madame
figures.
Tortellini.
Yes, Madame Tortellini.
Tetralini.
But they're kind of like the mother figures of all of these kids, and it's like they're just one big group of misfits, and you can't help but love them. I kind of feel like
Right.
my students about my students like that. But as the movie goes on, and I mentioned earlier that I was having, like, as we get introduced to each new character, I'm like, oh, do they really have that? And when I saw that, Harry and Daisy were actually not just 19, 20-year-old adults. No, they were 30 and 25-year-old adults. After I get over the shock of that, and I keep looking them up, I'm like, okay, so each of these characters that's one of the quote unquote freaks in the movie has their, like, they actually have that medical condition. I just couldn't figure out whether or not the woman playing Cleopatra is a real life bitch.
I know she did it so well. That's Olga
She really
Bakalova.
did.
She played
Yes.
that role so well.
Yes.
So essentially, we haven't really said what the story's about, but essentially, what happens is you have some normies or normal appearing people, Cleopatra and Hercules, that are having, a tryst. They're attracted one to another. It's the least I could say about it. And then you have the rest of the sideshow, which are made up of people of various limbs and assortments. You have Hans and Frida, who are the dwarves. You have Prozo, who's the clown. You have Prince Randian in this, and he was popular because he had no limbs. He had no arms. He had no legs. He was essentially a torso and a head,
Yes.
and he was popular at the time. He was a very popular sideshow act. He is in Ripley's Believe It or Not, but he was famous for rolling cigarettes.
And Johnny Eck, who is the half boy.
Yes, he had no legs. He was just a torso with arms, so he could
Yes.
walk around on his hands. And you had Pip and Zip, who had what's that, microcephaly.
Yes.
And then
And
you have Birdie, who had a bird-like type of progeria slash dwarfism.
yes.
You do have a bearded lady in this one, and you also have an intersex person in this one, where they are dressed as half, half a body of a man, half body of a female, which is, I guess, a great way back then of showing that they were intersex, but it's widely more accepted today.
And then you have Frances O'Connor, who plays the armless girl.
Yes.
And I don't know that she is actually given a name in the movie.
I don't think so. I don't think so. She is. But what happens is Hans and Frida are engaged to one another and they get in a little tryst. Well, they get in a little like argument or whatnot because he starts to speak ill towards her. And she's like, what the fuck is this? Well, you know, without being that rude. But, you know, why? You've never spoken to me like this. Why all of a sudden? Well, come to find out, Cleopatra has overheard Hans talking to Frida. Hans has a very large inheritance coming. And so Cleopatra starts to put, you know, her moves on onto Hans, and it kind of breaks up Hans and Frida. And the whole time, Frida and the rest of the sideshow is really telling Hans, hey, look, she doesn't love you. Like, she's an evil bitch. Like, she don't like you like that, bro. And of course, he's thinking with the downstairs head instead of the upstairs head.
Then
And
he doubles down.
he doubles down. Oh, she loves me, whatever. They get married at one point, and we have the infamous scene at the table. My favorite, Miss Birdie. Man, she is getting down and twerking like a mofo on that table.
Yes,
Coyote
I
Ugly
want
has
that at
nothing
my
on
wedding.
Miss Birdie.
Yes, I
And
want that at my wedding.
you got it. I will dress up, my feathers and all. But that is a very infamous scene for what they're chanting as they're passing around what is known as a loving cup. It's a cup of wine. They're passing around everybody to drink a swallow of it. Hans and Cleopatra have gotten married. And so the rest of the sideshow was telling Cleopatra that they're accepting her, like one of us, one of us, gobble, 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 gobble.
It
And it's
really
been
got on
used.
my nerves.
It's a very famous saying. I think I go around all the time, you know, when somebody does something at work and I'm like, oh, one of us. You know, the Ramones had a famous song with Gobble Gobble in it, where they kind of messed up the words some, but it's very famous from this movie. And a lot of people know the Gobble Gobble or the One of Us chant, but they don't know where it came from. And it came from here. But we get all of this in 64 minutes where it builds up. You see the relationship, you see where the bearded lady has given birth. And you have the love story. And it's really a love triangle because Cleopatra is still going behind Hans's back with old Hercules. And so, like, the rest of the sideshow winds up figuring out what's going on because I mean, people ain't exactly quiet, and I don't think that those horse pulled cabins that they had, they were, you know, living out of, were very soundproofed.
No, they were not. And half the time, the windows are open or
Right.
the
So
shutters on them are open.
the
And
fact that it took them so long to really kind of, you know, hide in the corner and catch on. But what happens is the night of the wedding celebration for Hans and Cleopatra, Cleopatra gets really drunk. She kisses Hercules in front of everybody, but she has poisoned Hans. She has put poison in his cup. And, you know, it makes him a little sick. And so then he gets to go lie down and she's giving him medicine, quote unquote medicine, to try to help him. But it's just straight poison. So, Katie, one of my questions is, how much poison do you have to have for a dwarf? Like, I know that stuff back in the 30s had the laudanum, had the opium, had straight. This was back when they still had cocaine and Coca-Cola. You cannot tell me that whatever she's poisoning him with, like one half a teaspoon, wouldn't have taken him out.
I'm really thinking that she didn't have the heart to actually do it.
You know, I'm thinking she did, but I'm thinking she's a little bit on
But
the dumb side and maybe she
that
got some diluted poison or just.
and he doesn't drink but one sip of the wine.
Right. And then he's
Like she
kind of
keeps
like, eh.
encouraging to him to drink,
Yeah, keep
but
drinking. Even tries to put it up to his mouth at one point.
shortly after that she kisses Hans and he's like, oh, he's all down on himself and he's not paying attention to the wine right now. He's just realizing that his fake wife, or actually his wife, just kissed
Wife.
another man in front of everybody, and now they're making fun of me
Right. They're making
after
fun of
he
me.
after he was so adamant that it was real love, the whole time I'm like, oh, poor Frida. She sees what's going on and she's just so heart, like her poor little heart is just breaking. And where she gets up and walks off, and I'm like, you know what? You go. Because nothing says she has to stay there and watch all this.
Right.
And her getting up and walking off is kind of like the, I'm not going to deal with you anymore. I'm not going to sit here and torture myself and watch this mess. But I think that the movie, the movie as a whole brings to light people's xenophobia of people that don't look quote unquote normal.
Right,
And
people
it
who aren't what
really is
society considers normal.
right. And, when you look at the basic definition, it's a fear and contempt of strangers or foreigners or of anything designated as foreign. So somebody looking at something that doesn't look normal, that's not where they what they consider normal, you could consider that as a xenophobia, a form of xenophobia, where no, not having limbs is not normal for everybody. But you know what? Prince, help me
Randy.
out. Yes. You know what? He does a fantastic job.
I like
For
his line
me.
in this movie where, they're talking and they show Prince Randian's entire act in this movie when he's talking to, I don't know if it's Frozo or another gentleman, but I think it's Frozo, and they're just talking, but they show his entire act of him rolling a cigarette, lighting a cigarette and starting to smoke the cigarette. And Frozo says something to him, along the lines of, oh, that's not impressive or whatever, or oh, you always do that, or something like that. And he walks off and Prince Randian yells out, I can do anything with my mouth. And it's like, okay,
Yes.
bro. Like, we get it.
Yes. And it really plays on your fears of like from okay, so for me, I have this irrational fear of things crawling at me.
Ew, no, thank you.
Even when it's a cute little toddler, like my nieces and nephews, if they were moving real fast, I had to look away for a second and then look back and be like, okay, it's just the baby. It's okay. And then like now the girls have learned that they can do a back bend and then almost like bend their knees and their elbows and make themselves look like a table and then move. And I'm like, oh, hell no.
It's, so you
But
don't want to see the extended Exorcist cut with the spider walk.
no. And certain fears like that, it's like this movie is trying to point out that if somebody has a medical condition, it's not like they're trying. Like they didn't choose this lifestyle on purpose.
Right. This
Because I'm
was their life.
sure, right, I'm sure that, anybody with those conditions would. Well, yeah, life would be easier with arms. She wouldn't have to eat with her feet,
Right. Or put makeup on with her feet.
Right.
But that's a
Or,
good talent.
yes, it is. It is not something I could do, even when I was little. Not something I could do. But the movie really brings to light that they're still human.
Right.
They
And at the
still.
center of everybody, you're human. You still have
Right.
feelings.
Now, of course, they also have that game mentality where, Cleopatra's trying to unalive Hans and the others figure it out and then they turn the tables.
Right. But at that point, Hans knows he's being poisoned. So
Right.
he tells them to, hey, basically, yeah, do what you got to do. Right.
And you don't realize that he knows until she gives him the medicine in bed, and then you see him spit it into the napkin. And I was like, oh, he figured it out.
Yes, smart man figured it out. He
Yes.
so he builds up to this climax where we get this giant rainstorm, and you have these sideshow acts coming from, it's almost like roaches when the light comes on, where they're scattering, except for every single one of these sideshow acts is coming from a different crevice or corner, and they have such malice and intent on their faces and
Yes.
in their eyes. Like you can tell, gobble gobble, one of us, we about to fuck you up. So.
And what did you just say? There's a massive thunderstorm going on in the background. Again, it's a thunderstorm. I told you there's always a thunderstorm in a scary movie when shit's about to go down. And
Well,
shit's about to go down for real because their bestie mob mentality kicked in and they said, you fuck with one of us and we'll fuck you up.
right, which is
And then
hilarious.
they fucked her up.
They do, yes. They get old Hercules first. Now, part of one of the original endings that got cut out was they actually show kind of what happened to Hercules, and he became a castrato singer. So they castrated him. So that was lost footage. Now, this comes full circle at the end because, like you said, it did such a great job with this story. You forgot that the beginning is a barker, is a sideshow barker that's trying to get you to pay attention to this. Their world's best or the greatest, sideshow act that they have, that I think they were charging like an extra 10 cent to see or something. But it circles back and it's back to that man finally revealing this sideshow act. And it's Cleopatra. You see what has happened to her. She has basically become an ugly duckling. She has had her legs chopped off, her feet have been stretched to resemble duck feet, and she has had one eye gouged out. Her tongue has been cut out, so all now she can do is really squawk. It kind of sounds like Buddy in a way, and she has been permanently tarred and feathered. And so, I mean, the quality of life on that was not that good, but she was not a good person. So I don't know how to justify it and still sound like a nice person myself. But that was
It
karma, and gobble
exactly.
gobble, one of us took care of her.
Yes, I mean, and they meant one of us.
They did. She became, but that is not where the movie actually cuts off. There is another scene after that. But that just brings you back full circle from what you saw at the beginning. And then we see this nice, huge, big house. And I hate to say it as in big person house, but this is big person house. And you have Venus and Frozo and Frida visiting. And there's someone that's saying that they don't really want to see anybody. They're embarrassed of themselves. Da, 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 da. Well, they go in anyway, and they are visiting Hans. And he's in, has gotten his inheritance, and he's in his big house. And he was just so embarrassed by the way that he acted. He's embarrassed that he fell for Cleopatra's trap, but he's also embarrassed for what then happened to her. And all three of them, Frozo, Venus, and Frida, are oh, excuse me, are telling him, that is not on your conscience, that you are still a good and a just man. What happened to her is her own doing. Which I think,
And
if you're going to end a movie or if you're going to have a movie like this, I think that's a great ending.
yeah, and when you're an all-out bitch and try to be a murdering wife, you're gonna get your comeuppance. And this time we just didn't get our comeuppance, we became extra crispy.
Quack, quack.
And it was when the scene, the very end, where he's crying, where Hans is crying in Frida's lap, I'm like, the couple that should have been together the whole movie is now together. Well, even though they're brother and sister.
Right, even though they're brother and sister. Yeah, that makes you kind of gag a little. But they played the characters so well that you really root for them.
This sounds awful, but I love their voices.
Yes.
I love their voices. They were so, because of the hypopituitary, they sounded like small children.
They do. It does not make you a bad person. Now, Hans, Harry Earls, he was also in The Wizard of Oz.
Yes. But the thing that really kind of gave it away, at one point, she's got her arm on the table, and she's talking to Venus. And I'm like, okay. Her arm was more muscular than a child's would have been. Or more, it looked older than a child's arm.
Right. And she did. She had the horse act where she stood on the horse and
yes.
did acrobatics.
And when Cleopatra walks by her and like fluffs at the tutu that she's wearing, I'd have smacked her with that riding crop I had in my hand.
Right. Like, oops, bitch.
Yes. But I have to ask, because of this movie and Frozo playing the clown. And I know somebody happens to have chlorophobia.
Yeah. You're not going to get me in the same room with a clown.
Was it like, when you were watching this, since he never had the full getup on, was it easier for you to watch this with him just having the suit or just having the makeup? Since he wasn't,
you know,
all clown.
Right. This one, it didn't bother me so much because I think they humanized him, and they gave him, he was, you know, besides Venus, it was really just him and Venus that were, you know, as far as normies go in this movie, they were the only ones that were nice to the sideshow actors.
Yeah, and the only performers.
Right. The only ones that were nice to them and treated them like they were equal. So I think that helped me as far as, you know, not deucing the fuck out. Plus, I've been watching this since I was a really small child. And I don't think I ever made the connection that he was a clown. I think the only time that I made the connection that he was a clown was when we covered this on The House That Screams, and somebody said something, and I was like, what? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? It didn't connect for some reason. And I could just be blocking it out of my mind.
And I think maybe it being in black and white, the makeup was harder to tell.
Yeah, and I've seen maybe 5 minutes of the 60s version where they colorized it. But I didn't watch it all the way through, and it wasn't that I didn't want to. I think something about the black and white is just so much better. But this movie,
adds a little bit of mystery, or when it gets to where they're about, you know, where they mob up and they're about to go, you know, fuck around and find out kind of thing. It adds to the intensity of the scene.
Yeah, it does.
Because you've got with the rain going on, and I honestly want to know how hard it's got to rain to make watery mud like that. Because I ain't never seen that in my backyard.
You know, I'm pretty sure those rain machines help that out a lot.
Yeah. That was the thinnest mud I've ever seen in my life. And then all of a sudden carriages are just falling over like they just died. They just gave up.
They did. So this movie was filmed in 24 days.
Wow.
Yes. So they were on a track, on a budget, and had to keep things moving back then. So 24 days. One of the things that makes me really sad about this movie is not the movie itself. One of the things that became kind of true life over from this movie is while they were on the MGM lot and filming this movie, the sideshow actors, by the request of all of the other people who were filming movies and filming things for MGM, were so disgusted by how they looked that they demanded that they not be allowed in the commissary and not be allowed to eat where they ate. They needed to eat somewhere else. They didn't want to see them. So MGM constructed an entire like tent, like this huge white tent for them to come in, and that was where they ate their meals. The only ones that were accepted over on the other lot were Cleopatra, Venus, and Frozen. And so they were outcast, even on the set. Even on the
No.
set, they were outcast. So,
That's so sad.
but that shows you what society was. I mean, we still have a little bit of that today that we fight, but it was much more stricter back then. If you look at American Horror Story, the season where they covered the circus, there is a person who looks like Schlitzie on there, and there's a Zip and Pip on there as well. So, I mean, this movie has inspired generations on generations on generations, multiple movie makers, filmmakers, artists. I mean, they did a fantastic job for this. The budget, remember, this is 1932. The budget was $310,000. At the box office, it made $341,000. So it made its money back plus some. So it was not a flop, but it kind of became like a cult midnight kind of hit, you know, a la Rocky Horror. So the audience gave this a 95% score. I think it's probably one of the highest audience scores we've had so far. The critics gave this 80. So the critics are missing a few things. Right. The critics are missing a few things there. I think this is
Wait, like 8 as in one number?
no, AD, 80.
Oh, 80. Okay.
If it had been
Sorry.
that, if it would have been that low,
I
it would have already been on site. They could have met me at the flagpole at 3:30. I'm beating every single one of their asses. But no, it's 80. So they weren't as receptive to this as the audience was. But I think that also says something about the critics, because in this movie, like if you get mad at anything in this movie, or if you don't like this movie for certain stuff, that says something about you as a person and your acceptance of people.
And I think for 1932, that is, it's a message that would have been out there, but not, it would have been to love everybody. But I mean, this is still, we're talking about 30 years later, they're still setting babies out that are deformed,
Right.
leaving them out to let, as they, as some people would say, let nature take its course.
Right.
And that's 30 years after this movie, but we're still supposed to love everybody.
Right. You're supposed to
And
accept everybody, no
it's
matter, you know.
right. And I think this movie takes it like it really puts that in your face and makes you see, are you really accepting of everybody?
Right. You know, which side are you going to be on? I will say, along with the clowns, I am scared of little people too, but that's because my parents used to tell me they were going to send me away with a little person when I was little. So my parents contributed to that. Do you, any final thoughts?
This movie, there have been a few we've watched where I'm like, oh, I wish it would have been longer. This one, I think, was the perfect amount of time. And you know me, I'm all for like a 2, 3 hour movie.
No, ma'am, you what's wrong with society?
Let's face it, the longer the movie, the more popcorn you get to eat. But I really feel like this movie touches on things we're still dealing with today. Maybe not so much at a physical aspect, but on the same level as everybody should be treated with the same amount of respect and not poisoned by their castmates, especially the ones that they've just married. And, you know, some it when you find your tribe, you find your tribe. when you fuck around with the wrong crew, you're gonna fuck around and find out
Right.
that you never ever should underestimate anybody.
That's right.
And they underestimated pretty much
Everybody.
everybody
Right.
and didn't think that they had the mental capacity to comprehend what was going on, and they knew all along. So,
So, would you watch this again?
yes.
Would you share this with people?
Yes. Even my nieces and nephews.
That
And
was going to be my next question, because being over holiday break to record these and being around your niece and nephews, the few movies that we have coming up that we're recording, I was like, nope, they can't watch that. Nope, they can't watch that. And I got to this one and I was like, going to send you a message to be like, you know what? Your nieces and nephews might pay attention to it. It's an hour long. They might pay
Right.
attention to it, but out of everything we've covered so far, I think this is a good film for kids to see. I think it's a good stepping stone for kids to see so that they can ask you questions. I
Yes.
think this would get a lot of thought-provoking questions with kids, and questions not only about the appearances of certain actors or actresses, but kind of the whys or hows behind certain things.
And with my three, there's no telling what kind of questions we would get.
I think when you think about scary movies, especially
Yeah.
in today's culture, this doesn't quite blip too much on that side.
Right. We just went to go see a movie together for one of my nieces turned 12 this past week, and we went to go see a Disney movie for her birthday. And there was a still at 12 years old, there was a scene in the movie that she was not all about. It got a little too scary for her, and she always likes to cuddle up to me in the movies. And I think I figured out it's because she knows I never finish my popcorn. So I think she's there to finish my popcorn for me. But she turned her head and tucked her head and her nose behind my shoulder.
Oh.
And she's done that ever since we saw Moana.
Oh, I
If
love
anything
Moana.
is scary, she turns her head away. So I don't think this movie would make her do that because it's not presented in a way where any of the characters are scary. It
Right.
just plays up on our fears. So,
Yeah, I think they'd like it
yeah.
if they paid attention to it. An hour's a long time to ask them for.
If they've had their medication, they'd make it an hour.
Anything else?
Not for this one.
Are you a better person for having watched this? Are you glad I exposed you to this?
The whole time I was watching this, and I don't know if it's because I have so many friends at work who are sped teachers, and I see the children that they have in their classrooms that they bring around the school with them, and I interact with them like they are any other student. And the whole time I was watching this, I'm getting angry because of the way they're being treated by Hercules and Cleopatra. But the one character we haven't really talked about, Roscoe, the one with the stutter, he reminds me of my grandpa.
Of your grandfather?
Yes. And I watched it because when grandpa would get on a roll, not only did he have to talk with his hands, but there were certain words he would stutter over. And they kind of had that same look. I kind of feel like if he was willing, like he wanted to marry one of the conjoined twins. Now, of course, he might have been overbearing and a little controlling, but I think that would have been a not, I don't want to say stereotypical fiance in 1932, but not unexpected, especially if she's going to be sassy right back.
Right.
Like that was their natural banter. But I felt myself like I was so angry at the two of them for the way, and by the two of them, I mean Cleopatra and Hercules, the way they treated all of the characters that would have been considered the sideshow. And I think it goes back to that whole everybody should be treated with the same amount of dignity type thing. And do not underestimate somebody because they look different.
Right.
So, because my phrase for this movie is fuck around and find out. And well,
She did, and she did.
exactly. She did, and she did, and they did.
All right, from us here at Scare My Best Friend to Death, that's it. You can find us on Instagram at Scare My BFF. You can also go to our website, find us at scaremybff.com. We have a buy me a coffee. You can do a one-time donation, or you can donate monthly. We have three different tiers. All three tiers get you access to the episodes early. They get you access to behind the scenes footage, various pictures of Katie and I through the years. And the top tier scares me a little bit. You get to pick three movies a year for us to do. And that means that you're not only challenging Katie, but you're challenging me. And I'm a little scared of that because I know somebody's going to bring something with clowns up. And I got to survive. We're trying to scare her, not me. You can go there. You can donate, help us keep the lights on, help us keep the show running. You can find Scare My BFF at all of the places that you can find podcasts. You can also find me over on the House That Screams podcast, and that podcast is available everywhere as well. And you can find that podcast at House underscore Screams on X and on Insta. So if they sent you over and you're listening to us from there, thank you. If you haven't listened to them, go check them out and tell them that we sent you. But other than that, for us, deuces.
Bye, y'all.